Greetings, this is Sky and Telescope Editor-in-Chief Bob Noya. I'm on the phone with Bob Stevens, an amateur astronomer from Southern California. Bob is author of our feature article about his asteroid research that appears in our October 2010 issue. I had the pleasure of getting to know Bob last summer when he and I were both in the same tour group in China for the total solar eclipse. I also had the pleasure and honor of being the person to call Bob a few months ago to inform him that he had won the American Astronomical Society's Chambliss Amateur Achievement Award for the research that he describes in his Sky and Telescope article. I knew at that time that I wanted Bob to write an article about his work for Sky and Telescope, and I'm very pleased to see it appear in our October 2010 issue. So, Bob, I want to first thank you for taking the time to write your article and also for taking time out of your schedule today to be interviewed for the podcast.
Well, hi, Bob, and hello to all the S&T listeners.
And I understand, you know, we were on the same trip last summer to China, although you flew on to Wuhan to see the eclipse, where I stayed behind in Shanghai. And I understand that you were just out in the Pacific for the July 11th eclipse. Before we talk about your asteroid research, can you just tell me a little bit about your Pacific eclipse experience?
Well, yes, we just got back from, was on the Paul Gauguin out of Tahiti and got back a couple weeks ago, and we had simply a great time. And we had a successful viewing of the eclipse. There was a little bit of drama at the front end of it as the ship had to clear some clouds, but we saw almost all of it. In fact, we did see all of it, including second contact with some cloud obscuring. And we had simply a great time, and I really recommend to all of the S&T listeners and readers that if you ever get an opportunity, that you go see a total solar eclipse at some point in your life.
The article itself that you wrote for Sky Intel describes your activity observing asteroids, taking light curves, and finding out their rotation periods. But just for background, like, what do you do for a living, and how do you find time for all of this scientific research?
Well, I'm a certified public accountant. I own my own accounting firm in Southern California. So that affords me a certain amount of flexibility, and as such, I'm busier with my professional career at certain times of the year than at other times of the year. But in truth, you know, most of the activity for amateur and semi-professional astronomy goes on at night, of course. And I have a regimented routine that goes on that every night that I get home and it's clear, I fire up the telescopes. And every morning when I get up, I look at the data before I head on into work.
And so you're able to balance your hobby and love with your professional career, it sounds, quite successfully.
Yeah, and it helps to have a very understanding spouse.
Now, you mention in the article, and we show pictures of one of your scopes, that you use three different telescopes to do these observations. You use the one that's attached to your house, you know, at your home observatory, and then you have two other telescopes at a remote dark site. Can you describe what you do with each of these three telescopes?
Well, currently, most of my work is being done with the telescope at home in a fairly light polluted area in Southern California. At best, we can see fourth magnitude stars. The summer Milky Way is usually a dream for watching it from where I'm at. But that doesn't preclude us from doing measurement work on asteroids or even variable stars or other things that people might be interested in. But it limits me to the number of targets and the quality of the targets that I can select. So for that reason, a few years ago, we started developing a property for our astronomical society out in the desert, about an hour and a half drive. And there I have two observatories and two 14-inch telescopes, and I can go much deeper and look at some more interesting targets that I wouldn't otherwise be able to get to.
Then I guess it's called Goat Mountain. You look at probably fainter, smaller, or more distant asteroids that are, you know, not nearly as bright?
That's correct. For example, I can do work on the Trojan asteroids out there, which are typically dimmer targets than most of the main belt asteroids.
Sounds like you've really honed in on taking these asteroid light curves, and we show a number of examples in the article, and you describe their scientific importance. What is it about asteroids and these light curves that you find particularly interesting and compelling?
Well, it's one of the true areas that an amateur astronomer can participate in from a discovery mode. Early on, amateurs got interested in asteroids back in the 90s because they were physically discovering new asteroids that had never been known before and helping refine their orbits. And in particular, they were very interested in following up on the near-Earth asteroids, those that can cross the Earth's orbit and potentially be a threat someday. Now, since then, the automatic surveys have taken over, but there's a heck of a lot of work yet to be done on characterizing what these things are all about, finding out information about individual targets, what it's shaped like, how it's moving through space, how the sun's affecting its orbit, and other characteristics. Is it a binary? Is there, you know, two objects there that go around a common center? So this is a place where amateurs can really participate, and in fact, they are producing the lion's share of all the data being created today on asteroids either near Earth or in the main belt.
Yeah, and how many other amateurs are you aware of who are doing this kind of work?
There's probably a couple dozen around the world at any one time. People get interested and come in. And although a good number of them are in the United States, there's a fair number over in Europe, down in Australia, and other places. And we often collaborate with each other to combine our data when we can't get it from a single location.
And you described several of your results in the article, and we show light curves for like Euterpe, Parthenope, Ronin, and one or two others. Is there one asteroid in particular that you look back at your work over the last few years, and you said, you know, this was really a big achievement, and, you know, this asteroid's really interesting. Do you have a favorite result?
Well, my favorite is probably the first one I really had an accomplishment on was Euterpe, 27 Euterpe. That one, the astronomers at JPL had trouble with for years in that they could never quite figure out what its rotational period was. As it turns out, it must be fairly oddly shaped because the light curve is fairly oddly shaped. And so I've got an initial result upon that, and since then I keep going back to that well and getting new information on Euterpe because I hope to someday create a shape model of it.
Yeah, and I should mention in the article, we do show shape models for several of these asteroids, and I just found it very interesting about how you can turn these light curves and using software and computers, turn that into a model of the shape and find out that a lot of these asteroids are considerably aspherical in shape, which, of course, a lot of the ones you're studying are much too small and nowhere near massive enough for gravity to pull them into a sphere.
Correct. And the shape models are turning out to be surprisingly accurate. Those that have been able to confirm with either radar observations or with a spacecraft flying by, the shape models have turned out to be very predictive of what the asteroids really look like.
And you mentioned in the article that you collaborate with professional astronomers, such as Alan Harris, for example. Has the scientific community in general been supportive and encouraging of your work? And do you ever encounter an attitude like amateurs, they really can't contribute to science? Or is that pretty much that myth been totally dispelled?
Well, it's been over the years fairly much dispelled. Of course, early on, there was a little bit of that sort of attitude from some astronomers. But nowadays, amateurs are contributing approximately 90% of all the light curves generated in very good quantities and quality, much more than the professionals can ever hope to from the time that they can get on the professional observatories.
Is that kind of a problem that there's so many asteroids out there and there's just a finite number of professional scopes, and so some of these, as you mentioned in the article, have very long rotation periods and the professionals just can't get the time they need to do this research?
Precisely, and the fact that we can generate so many light curves on so many different objects means that now statistical studies can be done, and they can be grouped into common families with common characteristics, and they're starting to find out some very interesting things, such as there seems to be an abundance of asteroids that rotate at a slow rate, and they don't really know why at this point in time. There's been some theories kicking around. We know what prevents them from rotating too fast. We don't know what's causing them to slow down and then get stuck in this situation.
I found that when you discussed that in the article to be very interesting. And hoping that there are other amateur astronomers out there who will read your article and be inspired by it and who will want to follow in your footsteps and maybe get involved in this kind of research. What kind of money would be involved that they would need to spend to buy the necessary equipment, and what kind of skills would they need to develop before they start really making a significant contribution to science in this area of asteroid research?
Well, my suggestion would be that if you have invested enough in your equipment to have a top-notch astroimaging system and develop the skills necessary to do that, you have already made more of an investment than you need to do this kind of work. Basically, you need a telescope that's, let's just say, 12 to 14 inches that can track reasonably well, and a fairly good CCD camera, and you're in the ball game. Now, it really helps to have that mounted in a permanent situation because this sort of work needs night after night of data. And so if you have to go set your telescope up every night, you're not going to be as motivated as if you all you got to do is open the roof.
And besides this asteroid research that you do, do you do any other types of observing or research as well? Or are you pretty much putting all of your amateur time right now into this asteroid project?
Well, most of my amateur time is in the asteroid project, but I occasionally do other things as they come my way. For instance, just last night, I rediscovered C.K. Aquarius. It turned out to be one of my comparison stars. So I thought I discovered a new variable star, but when I did the research this morning to find out, oh no, this guy's been known for decades. So, but I've found a few of those, and I've contributed some light curves and things to the AAVSO. Of course, anybody who knows me knows that I love chasing solar eclipses around the world, although chasing is somewhat a misnomer. What I really do is get ahead of it and wait for it to come to me. And I have now seen 11 total solar eclipses, along with a number of annulars and partials and such like that. And I still occasionally take the pretty picture, but they become more of a nightscape sort of things than deep sky astroimaging that so many people have been getting into in recent years.
And in terms of what's next, are you just going to keep plugging away with this asteroid research, or do you plan on buying any new equipment or trying some new technique, or are you just going to keep doing for a while what you've been doing recently?
I do plan on continuing this for the foreseeable future. I have some equipment upgrades in mind, and not the least of which will be making the observatories out of GMARS, the Goat Mountain Astronomical Research Station owned by the Riverside Astronomical Society. Want to make that be remote controllable, so we're working hard towards those ends so that I can collect even more data.
Is there anything else that you wanted to mention that I haven't asked you about?
Well, just to say that this is another way of bringing some focus to an amateur astronomer as to getting an appreciation of the universe. If you can actually go out and help contribute to the big picture, maybe even have a discovery or two, that really brings focus to this hobby and gives you motivation to carry on and move forward.
Yeah, it sounds like you've really had some eureka moments and just feeling of really making contributions. And what's really drawn me to astronomy over the years is just the fact that astronomy is right now one of the few fields of science where amateurs can make very significant contributions. Written a number of articles over the years for Sky Intel about various amateur contributions, for example, with extrasolar planets. It's really quite remarkable. So that's something that's always really drawn me to astronomy.
It seems to be the biggest scientific field that amateurs can participate in. A couple of other might come to mind, paleontology being one of them, but, you know, there you're just one of the grunts. You know, maybe, you know, some zoology sort of stuff out looking for that rare bird or something like that. But when it comes to contributing to the sciences, this is one of the areas, and one of the most important areas, that you can participate in.
I absolutely agree. Well, Bob, you know, I want to thank you again for writing your article for Sky Intel. I think it's a really wonderful article. I hope it's very widely read and expect that it will be. And I want to wish you continued success, both with your eclipse chasing, and hopefully I'll see you in Australia in 2012, and also with your research.
Well, great. Well, thanks for calling, Bob.